long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Reuve.
Hogan's been busted open. This McMahon behind the lights. I guess he was on. And the referee slid the damn chair to the wall.
What the?
Shut the chair over. He's out cold. Mr. McMahon's smiling. Rock is stalking Hogan.
Yeah, there's going to be
probably the rock bottom. Hogan's bleeding. To his feet. Here's Rock. Look out. Here it is. Rock bottom to Hogan. The referee. What a miraculous recovery. This is a damn screw job.
Welcome to Review Away, everybody. It's John Pollock here alongside Wei Ting. Wei, how are you doing today?
A little under the weather.
I feel like shit, man.
I was sick yesterday. I had my throat was all messed up. And
yeah. Maybe I got it from you. Well, maybe you gave it to me.
I could have. I felt...
to you in this booth for 6 hours a week.
It's a lot of time. I felt pretty shitty on Tuesday, but I had to come into work because we had a bunch of stuff to do. With the preview show.
You know, that's what I've found, too. It's because of these podcasts. I can barely take any time off, even if we're dying. We have to come in here because we have a schedule now.
That we maintain.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, dedication.
Yep.
Heart.
For your sake, I hope you you are sick so that you can stay home on Friday, myself.
What? What do you mean?
Because then you wouldn't have to go somewhere on Friday night.
Oh.
So for your sake, I'm hoping that you get a day off tomorrow and only one of us has to suffer.
Okay.
So,
well, if you want to know what we're talking about, feel free to PM us.
Wei will fill you in.
Yeah. But I'm hopped up on NyQuil, John. It's my first time ever taking NyQuil.
You took the daytime version, right?
No, I took it last night.
Oh, okay. You took it this morning, maybe.
No. I took NyQuil before I went to sleep, which is when you're supposed to take it. But it didn't really kick in, I guess, until mid-sleep. And so I woke up with it. Still in my system, and it's still in my system now. I feel like
so
all
you're drowsy
stoned.
And stoned.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay. Didn't kick in until mid-sleep.
I don't know how. I don't know if it's supposed to work that way.
Well, I wish you the best, and we'll find out. At least you have a calm day today, where we aren't doing too much. So find out how this experiment turns out.
Okay.
In addition to the review today, Wei, we're going to be chatting about No Wei Out 2003. But we promised it on Review and Impact tonight. Dave Wills, the crying wrestling fan, is going to be joining you and I to chat about his fame that he has accumulated through the Jimmy Kimmel Show and recently on Tosh.0.
This is a huge deal for all of us here.
Yeah, this is by far the biggest guest we have had.
I would say so. Maybe the most well-known. He's definitely broken out into the mainstream, this man.
Yeah, since we've been doing these podcasts, this guy is he's going to bring us some downloads, I'm hoping.
Hopefully.
So there we go. He's going to be coming up following the review tonight. Anyway, everybody, No Wei Out 2003, February the 23rd of that year, from Montreal, Quebec, in the Bell Centre. A Canadian pay-per-view, Wei.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't get too many of these back in the day.
Okay.
I don't know.
Do we still? We don't get them that often either.
It's the last pay-per-view in Canada. God, I'm going all the way back to, there was an Unforgiven here in Toronto, 2006, the one where Trish retired.
There must have been one after that.
I don't know if
there must have been a Montreal one after that.
Believe me, if you and I fuck up anything, statistic-wise, someone will point it out for us, I guarantee.
Okay.
The event is sponsored by Starburst.
Yummy.
Sour Starburst.
Sour
candies.
Starburst.
Yep. Which is the exact taste that was left in my mouth for the main event. And, of course, we've got a theme song for this pay-per-view, Wei. Bring Me to Life by Evanescence, and this was a big hit during this time period where everyone loved Evanescence, and she She had this song, and she also did that song.
No, Evanescence is the band. The girl.
Okay, please. She was like very much solo.
Her
That's like
is,
saying
she has
Bon
a name.
Jovi had a band. I mean, no one knows who the band was.
Well, it's not like her name is Evanescence.
It's like Avril Lavigne was in a band.
Listen, but she's not a solo artist. She
she was marketed as a solo artist.
Fine. You know, that happens almost all the time whenever there's a female front.
Amy,
front,
what was her name? Amy Lee?
Amy Lee. Yeah. But it happens all the time whenever there's a front woman to a band. They soak up all the attention.
Well, would this band have had that much more attention
if it was
without
a
her?
Dude?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Imagine a guy doing this song.
I could imagine.
A deep Bring Me to Life.
Yeah.
It would have been...
I played my friends and I, we like just played in a stupid high school band together, and this was towards the end of high school when the song came out, I think, and my friend did this really funny, every time I think of this song I think of like the really funny imitation that my friend did, because he would do the female and the rap parts. So he would do the whole thing in like a high-pitched voice, and then when the rap came about, he would just change his voice and go back and forth between the rap parts and the singing.
Do I know this friend?
Yeah, I think you do.
Who is it?
It's Jeff. Do you know Jeff?
Jeff did it.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I don't know if you know Jeff.
We should call him.
Anyway.
He should sing us out.
I have a tape of it. Maybe I'll play it.
Do you?
No, I don't think I do.
That could have been our outro.
Let's cut all this out.
No.
We need to cut all this. Let's start over.
The song.
Let's redo the whole podcast.
Did you notice there was no opening video for this pay-per-view? It was just like all of a sudden the WWE open, and then all of a sudden it went to the pyro for the show.
No,
there's
didn't
no
notice.
Video.
No, I didn't notice, and that was fun.
Well, then it wasn't missed. I was very disappointed because the first voice I heard was Jonathan Coachman, and he's calling the show with Jerry Lawler on the Raw side, and they explained that Jim Ross suffered a concussion on Raw the previous Monday.
Yes, let's bring people into...
bring them to life.
Let's bring people to life. What exactly was happening here with... the absences of both The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah, this is actually a great tie-in because both are, one's back and one is coming back to television in Austin and The Rock. At this point in time, everybody, Steve Austin had been gone for months. He was he had left to go home in June of the prior year.
He took his ball and he went home.
He took his ball and he went home. And they subsequently buried him on Confidential the following week. Where basically this is how it was laid out. Austin had done this interview on Bite This, the WWE.com show, stating that he wasn't happy with creative and what they had been doing with him.
This was around the time when they were asking him to put over Lesnar, but Austin didn't feel that it was the right
time. Well, that's what came out of this Bite This interview. Is they booked him in a match with Brock Lesnar on Raw for the Monday night with no promotion, no build-up. Mm-hmm. It was an Impact build. And it was exactly like Jeff Hardy, Rob Van Dam, where they were going to just give it away that night for free. And Austin and Lesnar would go over. And Austin said he had no problem putting Lesnar over, but they had just started to push Lesnar. He had just debuted the night after WrestleMania, and this was in June. And he said Austin should be the last guy he beats, not the first guy he beats. And if you go back and look at it, they kind of started off where Lesnar... the guy that they would build him up for was The Rock at SummerSlam. I thought I completely 1,000% agreed with Steve Austin's logic here in not throwing this match away on television, unpromoted, and it would do what at best a good TV number, probably not even a great TV number because of no build. So he said he wasn't showing up at Raw. He didn't show up, and it led to him going home. He had also been nursing a bunch of injuries at the time, and so there was a lot of bad blood here because Austin had no-showed Raw. They went on Confidential, made it very public that Austin was basically a coward for going home and not settling business the right way.
And this was also the time with the whole Deborah split.
Yes, this is also where all of that occurred. And Austin, I believe he was arrested shortly after this. So not a good time period for Steve Austin at all during this whole period.
Now, the build for this angle Eric Bischoff was the GM of Raw at the time, and Vince McMahon told Eric Bischoff that he had 30 days to shake up Raw, whatever that meant.
Basically said, this show sucks under your watch.
Yes, and so Eric
Bischoff... Do better.
Yes, and so Eric Bischoff decides to bring in Steve Austin and works very hard to try to bring Steve Austin back. Part of this by attacking Jim Ross, kicking a cinder block through Jim Ross's skull. So this was the build for Steve Austin's return.
Now, I'm not going to reveal what happens later in the show till we get to it, but let's just remember that, folks. 6 days ago, Jim Ross had a cinder block smashed on his head. So let's get into the show, Wei.
Oh, also, let's talk about the other one, because this
Rock.
Was also The Rock's big return to before the Mania of this year as well.
Everyone remembers his two big matches of 2002, or WrestleMania against Hogan and Lesnar at SummerSlam. Both shows, Rock was getting like the Cena treatment, where he was just booed. Mm-hmm. And they all got behind Hogan, they all got behind Lesnar. And then when they did the 10th anniversary Raw special that we reviewed months ago, Rock did a pre-tape and got booed as well.
Oh, my God.
And they were planting the seeds for Rock to come back as a heel.
That was a lot of this was unintentional, though. I mean, that video that we saw at the Raw 10th anniversary, that was just a negative reaction from the crowd to this video that they hopefully intended would receive a good reaction.
I think there was a noticeable chunk of the audience that was a little... anti-Rock at this point, just because he had been pushed so hard as a babyface.
Yes,
he had left to go do all these movies.
That's what I mean, and that's
so,
what I mean,
yeah.
John.
It's like, here's this guy that is sending us a tape promo.
But it wasn't intentional by the office, I don't think, especially at the time of that video.
I would almost think they could have at least foresaw that tape promo would have got booed. Because if you remember, right at the end of the promo, he says that, I'm coming back soon, and... You have absolutely no idea what I'm going to be like when I... He said something like that, where it was almost like a little tease, and...
I just don't give him that much credit to put that much thought into, hey, we're going to try to subtly turn this guy heel by making a really long video to bore the audience so that hopefully they'll boo. I don't give him that much credit.
You remember, the Raw anniversary was just like a week or two before he came back as a heel, so they had... Clearly made up their minds at that point he was going to be back as a heel.
After the video, I would think.
After
seeing that negative reaction to that video, how are they going to – what confidence would they have to bring him back as a babyface?
Well, that's what set up all of this, everybody. So Rock is a heel and Austin as a super babyface.
Yes. And
this was all built around – this pay-per-view was built around basically Austin's return and then the rematch from WrestleMania the year prior. So this was a very strong build for basically a transition pay-per-view between the Rumble and Mania.
Hulk Hogan's part of this was Hogan came back in January after losing to Lesnar. This was his return, right? He was taken out by Lesnar before Lesnar won the title, and then Hogan came back he came back as Mr. America before that, didn't he?
Was
that after?
It was later after WrestleMania.
Okay. Well, anyway, Hogan makes a return in January. He says he just signed a new contract, and at that point in January, he starts working an angle with Vince, challenging Vince to a Mania match. And then Vince says, no, you will not fight me. You will fight my representative. And The Rock comes back now, a full-blown heel, brand new entrance, brand new character. And now you get the rematch between Rock and Hogan.
And another interesting fact, Wei, in addition to all of this, is that the SmackDown writing team was completely flipped over heading into this show earlier in the week. As everyone knew, Paul Heyman was the head of creative on SmackDown for the past couple of months, and that was where you got all those great matches on television. They had started getting characters over. You saw Matt Hardy moved over to SmackDown. Mm-hmm. Lesnar was moved there. Big Show that they did a really good job with. But the decision was made to take Heyman out and make him a consultant to both shows, and it was going to be Bruce Pritchard and David Lagana that would become the head writers for SmackDown at this point. And this was kind of their first show since that big change earlier in the week. And Heyman would just be a consultant and an on-air personality. So a lot going on behind the scenes, more so than what was actually happening on the screen at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get into the show, Wei. And first up, we have Coachman brings up that this is the first pay-per-view in Canada since 1997. And Lawler says, Well, the fans would love to see Michaels here.
The first pay-per-view in Montreal since 97.
Oh, is that what he said? First, yeah. Okay, in Montreal then, since 97.
Because of WrestleMania before.
That's true. Yeah. And Lawler says that the fans would love to see Michaels here. And Coach responds, why is that? And he suddenly connects the two. He had no idea.
Really? Maybe.
Did you hear? He was not doing it sarcastically. He really didn't understand.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
let's listen and you be the judge. So we go to our first matchup, Chris Jericho against Jeff Hardy. This was actually a late change because on the Raw the prior Monday, Test and Stacy Keibler missed the show due to a snowstorm in Baltimore in the Northeast, and they couldn't make Raw on time. So they took them out of the pay-per-view and put Jeff Hardy in here. And this actually led to some heat on Test because they had called him on the weekend stating that the weather is going to be bad, you should leave early. And they're like, no, no, we'll leave Monday morning.
Wow.
And then they didn't make the taping, so they were taken off the show, and it was Jericho against Jeff Hardy. Hmm. And this was in the midst of the Jericho Shawn Michaels build for WrestleMania. So the coach mentions that Ross will be on Raw tomorrow night. Lawler ends stating, we miss you, to Jim Ross, which I was echoing those same sentiments at this point. Jeff Hardy came down to the ring. He had a fake sleeve painted on.
Fake sleeve. Okay.
Like the tattoo sleeve. He used to draw them on him.
Yeah. Do you think he plans his painting beforehand? Like he sketches it?
No. I'm just sure he's just winging it.
And he just slabs it on and says, oh, this looks good. Oh, no, it doesn't look good. I'll just cover up some more with...
Comes from his imagination.
Yes.
I thought Hardy looked really sloppy early on in this match. His punches looked really weak.
That's the way they always look.
I know. They're, I don't know. It
they're just not really punches.
It was exceptionally bad in this match. I thought early on this match built much better. But Jericho got the heat with a clothesline to cut off Jeff Hardy. Hardy then came back with a somersault over the top rope to Jericho. Then we saw a springboard into a moonsault off of the top rope by Hardy off the ropes. And this is when this was the first pay-per-view I had ever heard the loud two chant for a near fall. And I believe this chant originated in Montreal, but you hear it every now and then at shows, but it was exceptionally loud on this show for all the near falls. A little annoying. Jericho's forehead got busted open. You could see it was definitely done hard way. Hardy runs across the barricade, but Jericho ducked out of the way. I thought Jericho played a really great heel in this match. He was like cupping his ear to the crowd and mocking just the fans in general.
He was, but the crowd loved him.
They were getting behind him at different parts in the match, but I thought overall Jericho was doing a fairly decent job
here. He was, but this was obviously this was Montreal, and Jericho being a beloved Canadian, you can't just be a Canadian, of course, but Jericho is a beloved Canadian. So the crowd, I felt, was largely for him. But they weren't necessarily booing Hardy, and that is until Hardy took off his shirt. Girls cheered, but the guys would not care about that.
And I would not make that just a Canadian distinction. I would think at any arena,
yes.
No guy is going to scream for Hardy taking his shirt off. We saw a sign in the crowd that said Farewell Perfect, who had just died recently, right before this pay-per-view. This is when we started to hear the big chants for Jericho. They popped for his face plant, but when Hardy got his knees up for the lion salt, they weren't exactly turning on Hardy, but they were, you're right, way very pro-Jericho at different parts. We saw a whisper in the wind by Hardy for a two count. Hardy then hit this really shitty enziguri, but Jericho tried to duck, and it led to the walls of Jericho. Not a very smooth transition from one to the other. Hardy then hit a running hip toss off the top rope and then a swanton onto Jericho, but Jericho got his foot on the ropes. Hardy missed another swanton, and Jericho gets the hits the lion salt this time, but Hardy kicks out. This match was going – it was about 15 minutes at this part to kick off the show. Hardy countered a back suplex. That also, I thought, looked bad. And then Jericho was crotched on the top rope. Hardy goes for a Hurricane Rana, but Jericho catches him, power bombs him, and then applies the walls. Jericho walks into the middle of the ring and gets the submission victory. So keeping Jericho hot going into his match with Michaels at Mania. And that was when we saw after the match, Shawn Michaels ran out and was booed out of the arena by the Montreal crowd. This was the first time Michaels had appeared in Montreal since the Survivor Series.
That's right.
So Michaels runs out to attack Jericho. Christian is out as well. The fans were hating Michaels. But then Michaels makes a comeback with this weird-looking like double DDT in the air to Jericho and Christian, then hit a super kick to Christian, and the crowd was at least mixed.
Yes.
And Michaels was terribly dressed here. He had these horrible, like, beige jeans on.
Beige jeans, okay. You know, I didn't feel that. I didn't hate this match. I thought it built pretty well.
I thought Jeff Hardy at times needed to be carried at certain parts in this match, but it built well to the finish. I totally
know what you mean about Hardy's sloppiness. I guess I've just come to expect that from him, and so I kind of look at a typical Jeff Hardy punch as a standard punch for any other guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
it's kind of like watching RVD's punches there.
Maybe, but I just kind of ignored anything like that. But and
the crowd
I, and
really
I enjoyed this match.
No, I thought it was a good match. I didn't think it was bad at all. Then we go backstage and Kurt Angle is with Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin. Angle says that this country is filled with bitter people, with no Olympic heroes, and they may tell them that they suck tonight, and in actuality, Canadians who want to be French suck, and that their opponents tonight are not champions. Hmm. Very easy heel heat here.
Mm-hmm.
French people suck. He also mentions that in their opponents, Benoit, Edge, and Lesnar, he's not going to lose to a human gorilla and two Canucks. And all Haas and Benjamin apparently were told was just not in agreement. And then when he says to come in for the game plan, they lean their heads in. That's all they did.
Sure.
It's just a consistent nod by both for like a minute.
Yes.
Limousine arrives, Evolution gets out, and we see a pickup truck in the back with Austin's symbol on it that the crowd pops for when they see the visual and put two and two together. Hey, Austin's in a match tonight, and he's here!
And there's a truck with his logo on it. It must be his.
He drove here in a snowstorm in his truck.
Yeah. How do you know it's his truck? Well, all wrestlers put their logos in their names.
Well, you have your face on your car door.
Of course I do.
Next up, Kane and... Lance Storm and William Regal defending the tag titles against Kane and Rob Van Dam. Coachman states that RVD made his debut at No Way Out in 2002 against Goldust, which was not true.
Yeah, I was trying to think about that.
Maybe he made his No Way Out debut in 2002, which who gives a fuck?
But was No Way Out always in February?
Yeah.
It was. Yeah. Okay.
I thought a great sequence to start with RVD getting the best of Lance Storm. They were just doing a lot of transitions together. RVD has he was showing a bit of like explosiveness that you definitely don't see in him anymore. Like just in much quicker and just seemed to be a lot more crisp here. Hit a split leg and moonsault to Regal for a two count. Then Regal was dropped with a slam,
a scoop slam.
Yeah, from Kane. And it looks like he landed badly and hit the back of his head because they went to a pinfall and Lance had to break up the count because Regal was not moving here.
Yeah.
And tagged out. And he basically looks like he got a stinger here mid-match.
Yes. And the announcers actually acknowledged it. And I'm really glad that they did acknowledge it. And they even showed a replay of the slam right there. So he continued wrestling, which... you know, in wrestling, I guess, is the norm.
Well, yeah, this is second match in. Come on.
Yeah.
Tag titles. Van Dam hits a somersault plancha to the floor. Storm then knocks RVD off the top rope to the barricade as he goes for a frog splash. The heels were working on RVD in the corner. Kane then got the hot tag and hit a flying clothesline to Regal. A flying clothesline from Kane right after you got a stinger. That wouldn't be on my top priority list. Then we see a back body drop to Storm and follow-up clotheslines. Storm then stopped the chokeslam and tried to adjust the mask of Kane. And this leads to Kane accidentally chokeslamming Rob Van Dam, and Regal gets the pin. And they tease dissension between RVD and Kane because that's a feud we're all dying for. I thought the finish was a little hokey where Kane couldn't see and just is giving blind chokeslams hoping that one of them is his opponent.
Yeah, I think you're right. on paper, I could just see, you know, like in the creative meeting, hey, we need to finish for this. Why don't we have Lance Storm adjust Kane's mask? And Kane can't see, so he attacks. You know, like if you could buy the whatever formaldehyde on a cloth, I can buy this.
I could buy that more than, well, yeah. It was Kane's
salt.
New,
if you could buy salt.
You can't see me. So RVD and Kane, everybody, who would team up in the dark match for WrestleMania next month.
Yes. Despite all this, I thought it was another good match.
I thought Lance looked great in this match. He's
three very capable guys there, and Kane was kept in there kind of minimally, and he was used very well too. So, like, I would say all four of these guys very capable.
And they kind of had to work around a big audible here with Regal's injury mid match.
Right, yeah.
So I enjoyed kudos to those guys who were really on their feet when that happened. Then coming up on pay per view this month, Way. It's the making of the Divas Undressed magazine.
Yeah.
Did you get this ad?
I got it.
I guess you didn't note it like I did.
Nope.
So you could, for $10, find the making of a magazine. Taking photos of women.
Cool.
Josh Matthews, with one T, is with Matt Hardy and Shannon Moore.
Two T's.
Did he have two T's here?
Well, Matt Hardy has two T's.
Oh, Matt has two T's, but Matthews had one T.
Yes.
Okay.
You know, I was thinking about this the other day. Maybe he just wanted people to find it easier on the internet. And this is why...
People on the internet can't spell? Is that why?
No, because there are many Josh Matthews, and you want to be the only guy with the spelling.
Maybe.
And maybe this was the thinking behind the core as well.
Oh.
It's easier to look up on Google.
Maybe. Matt is challenging for the Cruiserweight title tonight. He's got Shannon Moore in his corner. Says he's had trouble losing 10 pounds over the past 2 weeks. Good thing this guy never gone to MMA. 10 pounds in 2 weeks.
Maybe he was already down to the very bottom.
Maybe. Maybe it was just water weight he had to get rid of. He walks off camera, and then we see Jeff Hardy walking back from just losing his match, holding his head, and Matt scolds Jeff for losing all of his matches and not following Mattitude, and it leads to Jeff slapping Matt. And I didn't really know the point of this, because this wasn't going anywhere.
Well, they were... Yeah, I think...
They were on separate shows.
Yeah, I know. But back then, they always liked to do these little backstage skits on pay-per-views whenever the two people from the two brands would collide backstage. And I guess this was just it.
A way to interact, just a one-off.
Interaction, yes.
Okay. We go to Michael Cole and Taz calling the action for SmackDown, who took their pot shots at the Raw crew. And then we got Billy Kidman against Matt Hardy for the Cruiserweight title. Hardy comes out to his old Windows Media Player entrance with the facts, Matt facts.
So he's actually been an internet wrestler for a...
That's been his gimmick for almost a decade.
A whole decade.
Now. Yeah. It says Matt is annoyed by snow and ice, and he takes his hot tea with milk and sweetener. Do you ever use sweetener?
As opposed to sugar?
Yeah.
No, I don't. Have you?
No, not really.
What is the difference that big?
Well, I just said I don't use it, so I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you never even tried it?
I probably have at some point. No noticeable difference. I'm sure calorie-wise, one's worse than the other. Sweetener's supposed to be better for you?
No, neither of us really have to care about calories
at this
point in our lives.
But Matt Hardy does, because he was the gimmick was he is not a cruiserweight, fighting here for the cruiserweight title. So I guess he had got him down to some mythical weight that...
What is the cruiserweight limit?
You know, in WCW, they always established it as 220 pounds, but which is hilarious that the lightest wrestling weight is like a heavyweight in MMA.
Yeah, that's true. That's absolutely true.
Wrestlers are big.
You know, I guess maybe they just made up some weight that sounds light by wrestling standards.
Cruiserweight in boxing is 205.
Oh, okay.
But that's like... the second largest weight.
But, like, legitimately, a guy Stone Cold Steve Austin, how much do you think he weighs? How much does this guy
Austin
weigh?
Austin wrestled at around, like, 235, 240.
Okay.
So he could have lost 20 pounds.
He could have been a cruiserweight. There you go.
He could have cut down. They bring up Matt beating up Jeff on Raw and then leaving for SmackDown months ago. Kidman is tossed into the post from the apron and to the floor. Hardy got the heat on Kidman. Kidman made a brief hope spot with an enziguri, but Hardy then cut him off. Kidman blocks the twist of fate into a drop kick, sends Matt to the floor, and then a follow-up plancha to Matt Hardy. Kidman blocks another twist of fate. He gets knocked into the ropes, and he takes out Moore and then walks into a side effect by Hardy. Kidman comes back with a bulldog off of the ropes. Then Kidman goes for the shooting star press and...
misses.
Oh, this was the fuck up. Kidman goes for the shooting star press. Sorry. This was before the fuck up at the finish, where Kidman missed the shooting star press and Hardy hit this nasty looking twist of fate where Kidman took this crazy bump onto his neck. Uh-huh. And the crowd totally bought this as the finish.
Yeah. This is how Kidman excuse me.
We're sick, everybody. Please take a
Kidman always does that head first sell, like whether it's off a DDT
or
drop like the twist of fate, and it looks very good all the time.
Then Hardy tries to do a twist of fate off the top rope, but he ends up going to do the move. Kidman's legs are caught in the turnbuckle, and Hardy basically takes a back bump, and it's clearly a botched spot as they go right back to it with the transition of Shannon Moore getting on the apron, and he runs to attack Kidman and takes like a phantom bump. Where did you catch this? Where Kidman doesn't even acknowledge Shannon Moore.
You know,
Moore just runs into him and takes a bump to the floor.
I noticed Moore getting on and off the apron two separate times, and I wasn't really sure what that was about.
If you go back and watch this is hilarious to watch Shannon Moore take this bump without Kidman even looking at him, and Shannon just bumps like off his knee.
Well, you know, like to me, Shannon Moore's role in this whole match just seemed to be like that of a
cover up shit.
Like in a video game, just like maybe a manager that runs up for you to attack.
Yeah, that was his role. So Hardy recovers and then goes for the exact same move with the twist of fate off the ropes and gets the win. And I encourage everyone to go back and watch this Shannon Moore bump before the finish because it was hilarious. Yeah. A good match up until the finish. It just got screwed up there. But Matt Hardy, your new Cruiserweight champion.
I thought it was a good match, but the crowd was really not behind Kidman at all. And I attribute that to, well, the way his character was built up at this point, which was really nothing. And also his look. They took away his signature tank top and jeans that he had in WCW. He just looked so vanilla here at this point. He just seemed like a typical independent wrestler.
Came up to that hip-hop tune.
Oh. That's fine. The other thing I noticed was maybe it was because I was contrasting him with Lawler and Coach, but I really enjoyed Taz and Cole here.
This was when they were really good together. Mm-hmm. I thought this time period in the fall of 2002 and into 2003, I thought they were really, really good together.
Taz, of course, is very sharp with the technical calls. And Cole, as much as we complain about him now, he had the same energy that he has now, but he was able to use it to actually put over storylines. They hit all the storylines.
He was much more serious here, and it seems just like a lot of like goofy comedy now on Impact, which I find sometimes announcers, it's like you're also a reflection of the product you're calling.
Yeah, absolutely.
People love Tony Schiavone in the heyday of WCW, and then he became this announcer everyone couldn't stand. Mm-hmm. And it was like a lot of times you just tend to associate the voice with the product.
Yeah.
And when it's a hot product, it's really easy to get into it. But when it's a shitty product, it's kind of like that voice also suffers because of it, I think. Just be a natural parallel you draw between the two.
Could be. And I'm sure there was probably a lot of influence for these commentators from their producers backstage, too.
Yep.
You're mentioning a lot of the turnaround in the production end of things, and that maybe could have affected these two as well.
Edge, we cut backstage. Edge is laid out, and Chris Benoit is freaking out. Brock Lesnar is there. Stephanie McMahon is pissed, asking what happened. And Edge is just out cold here. So a phantom attack. Maybe Shannon Moore ran into his knee. And he's out and apparently out of the match for tonight. So the six-man SmackDown main event will be a handicap 3-on-2 match.
Yes.
Cole and Taz plug WrestleMania 19 and state over 50,000 tickets have been sold in Seattle. And then we go to our next matchup. It's The Undertaker against The Big Show with Paul Heyman. And there's a video of Big Show taking out The Undertaker with a choke slam off the entrance ramp 4 months ago. And The Undertaker was out on a stretcher. How many injury angles do you think The Undertaker has done in his day?
I was thinking about this, and it just seems like Taker,
disappears for a lot of time.
Yeah.
He kind of has to now. Like, he can't work a full-time schedule. But this was 2003.
I understand. I understand. And it always helps him, his character, to be away for a while.
I think it doesn't overexpose him. I think if he was there every week, you'd lose kind of the the uniqueness of his character. I think doing 1 to 2 matches a year is enough.
I think that makes his character special. It keeps it special, and that's totally fine. But absolutely, over the past 10 years, how many hiatuses has he had?
Somebody do the math for us, and do it in a chart or a graph.
Oh, God. Charts and graphs.
Charts and graphs, everybody. Undertaker made his return at the Royal Rumble, and then they showed the angle to build this match up featuring lots of boxes. Lots of boxes, Way.
Mm-hmm.
And this included the infamous angle where Chris Kanyon came out of one of the boxes dressed as Boy George, singing, "Do You Really Want to Hurt Me?"
Yeah.
And this was always alluded to as the WWE's own joke on Chris Kanyon, knowing that he was a homosexual, and the fact that he had not come out to anyone at this point in time. This was the last time I think Kanyon was on TV, if I'm not mistaken, before he was released, because he went through all those terrible health problems over the next 2 years. And he probably came back and worked Velocity and stuff, but in terms of like an actual angle he was a part of, this was it. And it ended with Undertaker just destroying him with chair shots, including an unprotected one to the head, which was brought up by a lot of people too after his death.
Oh, wow, really? That specific chair shot.
They brought up the because they were talking about Kanyon having a lot of concussions in his career, and they specifically brought this angle up where he would take chair shots unprotected. He was a guy that had lots of concussions.
Also in the boxes, we saw first Brian Kendrick as a, what is it, like a bellhop?
Oh, yes, as the bellhop. We also had a puppy.
A puppy, as well as Brother Love.
And Brother Love.
Bruce Pritchard.
And anyway, it ended finally with Big Show blindsiding Undertaker and attacking him.
I will say, though, this video made this build look awesome.
Well, as someone who was watching this when it happened, it was not.
Yeah. Must have been hell to sit through for 4 weeks.
The Undertaker comes out to his country tune. I always hated this theme song. Just hated it.
Is that what it is, country?
It sounds country.
It's like just a slower... You know, like
It's like something Toby Keith would say.
He went from having that awesome Kid Rock theme, then to like Limp Bizkit, which I also enjoyed too. I enjoyed him coming out to that song, to this.
Yeah. This was also when he had cut his hair, and Jim Ross had given him the nickname Booger Red.
Mm-hmm.
Not some of the best material he was given here.
Booger Red.
Anyway, he comes out. They brawl on the floor to start the match. Taker brings a chair into the ring, and the referee ends up taking a bump from Taker pretending to hit him. He just like basically shot his head in at the ref, and the ref took a bump off this look of death. Anyway, Show punches the chair into the face of the Undertaker. Then we got a bear hug spot by Big Show that Taker punches out of. Show continues to beat him down with headbutts, and Taker's forehead is opened up. Taker then made a comeback with clotheslines in the corner. He attempted a choke slam but could not lift Big Show. Taker eventually hit the old school off the ropes and then another choke slam attempt, but Show blocks, going for his own choke slam. And the referee ends up getting hit here, and Taker hits a low blow and a flying DDT for a two count. Show then lifts up Undertaker into the Dragon Sleeper, which was called the TCB. The TCB, taking care of business. That's what he should have come out to.
Oh, man.
Bachman Turner Overdrive.
The TCB. Why didn't that ever get over?
Shocking. Heyman ends up distracting the referee, and Taker lets go of the TCB. Then A-Train gets involved.
Listen, the TCB, it's almost as bad as the salad tosser.
Like the salad shooter.
The salad shooter, okay? Like, you have this very intimidating guy, the Undertaker, and you're calling his new submission move the TCB. Why? Simply because it has the word "take" in it.
I was going to bring up the comparison.
What other reason would they choose that name?
Okay, you just called it there the TCBY, which is what I associated it with. It was called the TCB, but TCBY is the famous yogurt company. And that's what I was going to make the comparison to, because at the time, I worked at Silver City where we had a TCBY, and that's what I thought, the country's best yogurt. The fact that you called it that makes my assumption
very
relevant.
Funny. I didn't even know about that.
Anyway, so Heyman ends up distracting the referee, and A-Train gets involved. Taker takes out Heyman, and then Oh, sorry. Heyman and A-Train go to the floor, and Undertaker hits a plancha over the top rope onto both men. Now, first of all, this guy doing a plancha is crazy enough. But when one of the guys in that had to catch you is Paul Heyman, I would have been fucking worried. A-Train certainly better had been in position for this, and Taker seemed okay, but this was nuts. Taker then calls for the tombstone. He gets hit with a choke slam, but then recovers. And then out of nowhere, he applies the triangle choke, which is identified as such. And this is how the match ends, with the triangle. Mm-hmm. And I did not recall Taker using this move this far back.
From the way it sounded from the commentators, it seemed like this was him debuting the move right then.
Yeah, and I don't know if they followed up and he used it on TV anymore, because I don't think he used this. But Taz immediately knew what it was.
Yeah,
which was great.
Well, didn't he use it against Angle?
They did the Carlos Newton Matt Hughes finish once, where Taker
had him in
where
a pin.
Angle went for the triangle.
That's right, yeah.
Taker picked him up for the powerbomb, and they did the double finish from UFC 31, I believe.
Which
not 31.
Which is
it was the November 2001 UFC show,
which
in
was
Vegas,
which was a Saturday.
It was a Friday.
Whoa!
UFC did Friday pay per views.
See,
yeah,
tricked you, got you. Good test. Anyway, so it seemed like a very awkward time to debut a move. I mean, if you think about it, yeah, he's not going to beat this guy with a chokeslam or a tombstone. He's not going to use any of those moves.
This was really good.
I just wish that they had built that move up either on TV beforehand or just gave a bit more of an introduction, because to me it felt like a bit of a flat finish.
To me, whenever people criticize like finishes and stuff, it's like 1,000% about how you book it. Look at the Cobra right now. That is a legit finish that people buy into. And the last 10 seconds of the Rumble was clear evidence of that.
And look at the Osirian portal.
Yeah.
You know, like, people don't care if it looks devastating, as long as I think the
like we've been taught that this beats guys.
Moves like the Cobra work because they're so outrageous. But because we all know that this is supposed to win, we're going to go along with it because it's so outrageous. Yet in pro wrestling, it just makes sense. We are able to accept it.
And it happened with the Gogo Plata, where they kept doing it and it would get no reaction. And then finally he hit it on Edge at Mania that year and everyone went nuts, because they knew, okay, this finish is deadly.
If Taker was to pull out that move now, immediately
people
fans
are
would
educated
all recognize
to it.
It.
They're like, this move has beaten top end guys and it's a legit finish.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed the finish to this match. And after the match, Taker ends up grabbing a chair, but A-Train stops him, and A-Train hits the derailleur on the Undertaker.
Mm-hmm.
A finish that never got a big pop. The derailleur from A-Train.
Yeah.
So, the plan at this point, I think, was to do Taker and Nathan Jones against A-Train and Big Show.
Oh, Jesus. Really?
They eventually had no confidence in Nathan Jones and just made it a handicap match at WrestleMania. Then we get footage of Edge being taken out in an ambulance, so he's out of the match later tonight. Eric Bischoff is backstage with Sean Morley, telling Bischoff that he has an army to back Bischoff tonight against Austin, and they go over the stipulations that they can make for the match with Austin tonight. Vince McMahon walks in, and he announces it's going to be a one-on-one singles match with no interference, and if anyone gets involved, they'll be fired on the spot. And Jerry Lawler sells this huge, so we're going to have no interference for Austin and Bischoff.
Good.
Up next, Kurt Angle, Charlie Haas, and Shelton Benjamin come out, accompanied by Paul Heyman, to take on Brock Lesnar and Chris Benoit. I thought the entrance of Team Angle was just awesome.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it too.
They come out where they're like in a triangle formation.
In a flying V.
Yeah, and Heyman's in the background.
And did you notice the moments when they each lifted their arms up? You know how Angle always lifts his arm up before the pyro? There were three hits of pyro, and the three guys lifting their arms up was each synchronized with the various pyro hits.
This was just awesome.
I always thought they looked awesome together. Just the visual of Kurt Angle.
They came out like this fucking like badass amateur wrestlers.
Exactly.
You know?
I always loved the idea of Team Angle, and I always thought they broke him up too soon. I just loved the idea that Kurt Angle would recruit these high-level wrestlers, one of them being Brock Lesnar's college teammate against Kurt Angle.
It was just done. So they had those hoodies as well.
Yeah. And
just the look and presentation of these guys was just, I thought they were fucking great.
And like Shelton mentioned in that interview on The Law last week, like the association with Heyman and Angle gave.
It was instant cred for these
guys. It gave Benjamin Haas that instant credibility, and they were able to back it up in ring as well.
And look at like. Man, you just look at some of the guys that come up from Florida right now who are clearly not ready. And, like, Haas and Benjamin came out of that OVW camp. And here they are, like, 2 months in, and they're in, like, the SmackDown co-main event here on a pay-per-view. And these guys, to me, hung with the rest of these guys. These top-town Angle, Benoit. Mm-hmm. Like, Jesus. So, anyway, that's us marking out here for this entrance for Team Angle. Benoit came out with his T-shirt that read, Toothless Aggression.
Yeah.
One of the worst T-shirts in wrestling history.
That was, I think that started out as like a fan sign. This fan made a Toothless Aggression sign, and for some reason they,
because it was eventually on Vince had started this big buzz term, Ruthless Aggression.
I know,
and it was horrible, and this was the remnants of it, Toothless Aggression.
Maybe they just felt like he needed some character, and so here's a shirt.
Michael Cole with his line of the night: "We are in Canada. Benoit is from Edmonton." You know what's an even cooler stat, Michael Cole? That Benoit was born in Montreal. Cole then fucks up the date for WrestleMania 19 and is corrected by Taz.
Oh, you know, like as much as I did enjoy the energy that these two brought to the broadcast, Cole definitely still needed some work. Like he was still calling her Karana's leg scissors at this point.
Well,
after like 5 years on broadcasting,
Benoit started. He was just on fire in here with Benjamin and Haas before he tagged in Lesnar. They kept Lesnar and Angle separate here during the early portion of the match, which is very smart because that was the direction they were going for WrestleMania. Angle ends up sneaking from behind the apron to choke Lesnar, and he's tagged in while Lesnar is selling, so he would only go in when Lesnar was weakened. Angle applies a rear naked choke and a body scissors onto Lesnar. Lesnar finally runs Angle's head into the top turnbuckle to break out of that hold. Benoit gets the hot tag. He hits Haas with a German suplex and then a series of three Germans to Benjamin and calls for the headbutt. And as he goes up, Angle sprints up to the top with a belly-to-belly suplex. But then Lesnar is on the apron and chokes Angle. So he is basically does the same spot Angle did to him earlier in the match. And that's broken up by Shelton. And Lesnar takes the bump to the floor. They do a back and forth between Angle and Benoit, working at a different speed than you will ever see, culminating in an Angle German suplex. Then they built to a hot tag with Lesnar this time, who just suplexed everybody on the heel side, and it ended with Lesnar going for the F5. Benjamin broke it up. They get back in the ring. Angle gets the ankle lock on Benoit. It's reversed into the crossface. Angle counters and reverses it back into the ankle lock. Another reversal. The crowd was just super amped up for this match. Haas and Benjamin finally broke up the crossface. Benoit then applied the crossface to Haas. Benjamin is thrown out of the ring by Lesnar, and it finishes with Lesnar hitting an F5 to Angle right as Haas taps out to the crossface. This match was fucking awesome.
Mm-hmm. It was great. And what did you, you know, would you expect anything else from these
five guys were working at, like, a different speed than, like, anyone on this card.
Yeah.
This was the gigantic contrast to what Raw would present next. Yes. But fuck, was this match good. I just love this match.
It was great. And I'm supposing that the Edge injury backstage was really just to create sympathy for the good guys and also to really to even out the odds, because if you look at these six, it's three main eventers against Kurt Angle and two new guys.
Well, it was legit to be the sixth man, and Edge, that was when he suffered his neck injury. It was a legit injury.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was how they wrote him out.
Okay, well, I thought it worked out better in the end.
Yeah, I thought so too. You had for numbers wise, it worked out fine. I mean, if you threw Edge in there, I mean, it would be just as good, I'm sure. But this just turned out really well. And for anyone, like, you just look at Haas and Benjamin at this point in time. It was like, these guys were just fantastic.
And I don't know why I'm doing this. I don't mean to mark out for Michael Cole. I didn't think I was going to watching this show. But I just wanted to note that I really enjoyed what they did with him here at the end. Because Cole specifically brings up how Haas was legal man here, and Lesnar did not need to F5 Kurt Angle at the end. And he says that Lesnar's F5 only served one purpose, and that was to put Kurt Angle on notice, which is the whole point of this match is to build towards your Mania match,
yeah,
to single out that feud between Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar. So I really enjoyed that call at the end there.
Yeah, and you know, at this point in time, Lesnar-Angle was like the big match for WWE to put together. It was a fresh match. It had this awesome background, and we'll talk about it more later down the road. But the build for that Lesnar-Angle, we can talk about what they did afterwards. And afterwards, Lesnar posed with the title following the match. That's always a little pet peeve of mine.
Yeah, me too.
I hate when one of the things about a new champion, especially one who's never had it before, is the visual of him with the title. You're kind of selling that visual. And seeing a guy pose with the title beforehand, I always have never liked that.
I agree with you. You know, like, I would have been fine if he had posed with it, then took it out and dropped it or something, just to say, you know, I want this, but I haven't earned the right to hold this yet. But we're just, we're very nitpicky right now.
I think it's a common little thing, you know? Just as much as we praise that Michael Cole line that you mentioned up there. That's a little thing too, but in the long run, it can make a difference for some. Then we get the video for Triple H and Scott Steiner. Let's sit back, everybody, and enjoy this one, because this is going to be a fun little ride. They showed the highlights from the Royal Rumble, and by highlights, I mean the lowlights. It was a disqualification win by Steiner. It was one of the worst main events in WWE pay-per-view history, where everyone knew the limitations of Scott Steiner except for Hunter, who insisted on doing a 20-minute match with Scott Steiner on a live pay-per-view, and they were booed out of the building. Hunter then brags about going 30 minutes with Freakzilla, and he says no rematch. Steiner interrupts, says, "I want a rematch." Hunter has a doctor's note. He cannot wrestle. And it leads to, I swear to God, Scott Steiner versus Batista on TV in a match I would have loved to have seen in 2003. And it ends with Evolution jumping Steiner. And then eventually Steiner defeats Chris Jericho.
This is the formation of Evolution, by the way.
Yeah, they just formed. Yeah, leading into
on
the
this attack.
Yeah. Steiner defeats Chris Jericho to earn the title shot at No Way Out. Then we go into the montage where, Wei, you can probably appreciate this more than most, but
no, man,
I want to get your thoughts on matching pictures to visuals, because part of the lyrics of Bring Me to Life are, look into my eyes as Lesnar and Hunter walk towards one another.
Steiner and Hunter.
Steiner and Hunter walked into one another and stared into each other's eyes as this lyric went underneath it. I burst out laughing and rewatched this three times. It was like so campy.
So cheesy. Just, okay.
And then we got the rest of the montage with Evanescence.
If I were to tell in the year 2011, if I told an average wrestling fan on the street, you're going to watch a video, and the video is set between a Triple H and Scott Steiner, and the music in the background will be Evanescence, Bring Me to Life. This is exactly what you would get with this video. The mental image in your mind would completely match this.
Yeah, where we got
what it was.
Suplexes matched up to Break Me Down.
Yeah.
WWE production team, everyone. I'm a big, big fan. I'm not saying that sarcastically, but sometimes it's tough to match programs with music.
Sometimes, yes.
This video, folks, and watch this Steiner and Hunter taking a step into each other's gaze towards this music. I howled. I just howled. And that leads us to Triple H against Scott Steiner, the rematch from hell. Triple H was accompanied by Ric Flair, and he's got his left quad taped up, so even better. The guy in charge of carrying this match is injured. Hunter looked just gigantic here, everybody. Gigantic. And ditto for Scott Steiner. And I had awarded a co-winner here for Scott Putski until we got a run-in later in the show by somebody who took their shirt off. Steiner goes for the quad right away and tries to pull the tape off and work on the leg. And it leads to Steiner sucks chance as he works over Hunter and applies the figure four to more booze. Flair rakes the eyes with the referee distracted.
Steiner's the baby face.
Yes, everyone. Steiner was the baby face here. Hunter was the heel. And it was like polar opposite reactions for each guy.
If you look at what he was doing in the ring, he was working on this guy's bandaged knee. And he was doing his whole cocky shtick where he would do the push-ups. And then, where he would go for a cover. And then before the referee reaches two, he would purposely fake out the pin attempt and do his push-ups.
If you just visually look at Scott Steiner,
yeah, does not
this
look
guy
like
screams
a baby.
Heel.
Exactly.
Like, exactly. Just if you weren't even a fan and you were just here,
yeah,
you would assume this guy's a heel.
Not to mention the fact that he just comes across like a total unlikable idiot when he talks on the microphone. Has no way to build sympathy or emotion through his promos whatsoever.
Flair ends up raking the eyes of the referee to break the figure four hold by Steiner. And Steiner then gets out and chases after Flair. And they boo Steiner when he finally catches Ric Flair and attacks him.
Yeah.
So we have Scott Steiner attacking a handicapped Hunter and an old man in Ric Flair. Steiner ends up getting knocked off the apron and goes head first into the steps. This got a pop. Next was a "You Screwed Brett" chant, which I was confused by until I saw Earl Hebner as the referee. Mm-hmm. They could not have booked this match worse.
Yeah.
Then they got a boring chant, and then that was drowned out by boos. Steiner makes a comeback. They cheer Hunter, getting the heat. Match is totally backwards. Lawler starts to acknowledge the crowd reactions. The biggest reaction is Hunter shoving Hebner twice, and the referee refuses to disqualify Hunter. Steiner then goes for a Samoan drop off the second rope, but Flair breaks up the pinfall. Steiner then puts on the Steiner recliner, and Flair brings out Orton and Batista. Batista nearly dies sprinting down the entrance and almost like wiped out. Steiner fights him off. Flair is knocked off the apron. Then Hunter goes for the pedigree, but Steiner makes a terrible recovery, tosses Orton over the top to Batista on the floor as Evolution is then banned from ringside. Steiner turns around, and Hunter hits Steiner in the head with the world title. With the 20 pounds of gold, he hits him in the head, but this is only enough for a two count. So then Hunter says, "What's worse than the 20 pounds of gold?" He hits the pedigree. Steiner stays down for the pedigree. And Hunter retains the title, everybody. So there is your lesson, everybody. The pedigree trumps a belt shot.
I'm sure.
Evolution celebrates at the front, and they pose at the entrance ramp. And this was just a horrible match.
Oh,
horrible,
man.
horrible.
That was pretty awful, man. The fans were definitely the stars of this match. They made this thing watchable.
Montreal just shit on Steiner. Oh, and what was even better, the next night, Raw was in Toronto at the Air Canada Center.
Uh-huh.
And I went to this show, and Steiner got the exact same reaction.
Yeah.
And Jim Ross tried to salvage it by saying, "Well, Scott Steiner is not endearing himself because he's got an American flag on his tights." Was not even noticeable.
Oh,
it was like an S,
great.
And it had red, white, and blue on it.
Yeah.
It's like just trying to make sense of it all.
That's hilarious.
Anyway, so that was that, everybody.
Scott Steiner. Wow.
This guy, maybe the first guy to headline two pay-per-views going into WrestleMania that would not be on the WrestleMania card.
Wow, is that right?
Yeah. Eric Bischoff is walking backstage in his karate outfit, and Test is booked to sit and watch the pay-per-view on a chair, and the whole Raw crew is laughing at him as he walks in. They show a video with Vince McMahon, basically what we recap, telling Bischoff to shake up Raw, and he had 30
yeah.
days to do so. This was a really good video done with like ticking clocks
uh-huh.
and counting down to 30 days being up, and they bring up the fact that Bischoff was the one who fired Steve Austin, said he wouldn't be marketable in black tights, and
mm-hmm.
brought up the whole back history. And there was something to be learned here about you were going to have a giant surprise here in Steve Austin, but we're not stupid enough to not announce it ahead of time. We announced Steve Austin would be at the pay-per-view, and we're not going to have him come out before the pay-per-view because you're paying to see him return.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought this was very well done.
Yeah. I don't know really what I think about this storyline because to me, excuse me, you had so much potential here for a Steve Austin return, after being gone for so long. Why not pair him up with a wrestler for an actual angle rather than Eric Bischoff here?
I would say the reason was you were paying for his return. You could have put him in there with anybody,
yeah.
I think. It was the return you were paying for, and then the next month at WrestleMania was when you were doing the big match with Austin.
With The Rock,
with The Rock.
Yeah.
Where you're doing a serious match
with
him.
Yeah.
This was all geared around his return. So I didn't have any problem with it. The video also featured a karate demonstration where Eric Bischoff kicked wood in half. He destroyed some watermelons, and then he destroyed the cinder block on the head of Jim Ross.
Yeah.
A potentially fatal Cinder block shot to
you know,
the head.
Maybe that's why I wasn't such a big fan, because when you do things like that, especially that karate demonstration, to me, it all just screams comedy. And if you have such a – your biggest star making his big return, now you're going to put him in this comedy angle? It was just so campy, like that cinder block off of JR's head.
Well, it shouldn't be comedy.
It just
should be a serious angle.
It just took me right out of it. They were trying to build sympathy for Jim Ross, but it just took me out of the whole storyline. It was stupid.
Well, the key is that Ross would have to be out for a while to sell it.
Oh, really?
So we go to Eric Bischoff against Steve Austin. And before the match starts, the Oklahoma theme song plays, and out comes Jim Ross with a bandage on his head, and he's here to call the main event, or he's here to call this match. And I was very happy by this. I understand the logic of a man having a cinder block destroyed on his head 6 days ago, but if Austin was coming back, I would want to hear Jim Ross call it and not Jonathan Coachman. So I was fine with this. Mm-hmm. So Ross comes out and basically says, I've come here to see a man get his ass kicked. All right. Bischoff comes out, cuts a promo stating that we don't have to have this match. We can call this off. And then Austin's music hits to the biggest pop of the night by far.
So Stone Cold, I know you can hear me back then. We still have time to do the right thing, and I will forfeit this match to you right now. And by God, there he is! A tallest son of a bitch, and the WWE is the doorway out. And by God, he came, the Rick Another Man's ass. Austin is back.
Austin just was. This place went insane for Austin, and runs in, and basically the match begins. We get a stomp in the corner with Chance of What. The Raw roster is laughing backstage at Bischoff getting murdered out here. Austin takes the martial arts gloves off of Bischoff, goes to the floor, chops Bischoff, tosses orange juice onto Bischoff, then he throws him into the crowd. He hits the stunner in the ring for a huge pop. And then Austin continues to do this, and as he would go for the pinfall, he pulled a shoulder up of Bischoff. He did this twice before finally hitting the final stunner and pinned Bischoff. This was a total squash match. Coach didn't say a fucking word during this match, which I had no problem with. Ross is just insane here on the mic, going crazy.
Water man slipping!
After the match, he hit another stunner on Bischoff. He left the ring, ran back into the ring to pose again. This was a very, very strong reaction for Steve Austin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's been away for so long.
That's it.
Yeah.
Nothing bad.
I don't know.
I didn't like it as much. Basically an angle. It wasn't so much a match.
Yeah.
I think people just wanted to see Austin, and that was enough.
I know, I understand that, and they would have cheered him regardless if he was, no matter who he was up against or not. But just, let's say Undertaker, for instance, if he, or say The Rock, let's say The Rock came back, on Raw today and was just involved in this one-off angle beating up Vince McMahon, the crowd would go nuts. But to me, there was a lot more potential to build to something bigger with Steve Austin's return, and especially considering this was Austin's third last match in before he retired. This was his third last match. He had another one with Eric Bischoff, and then he had that one with The Rock at 19, and that was it for the guy. So I thought you could have made better use of Austin here.
We go to Michael Cole and Taz, who are selling the Austin return. Taz says that Jim Ross needs decaf. And then we get a video for The Rock and Hulk Hogan, and they replay the clips from WrestleMania the prior year, and they play up the crowd reaction that Rock got that night to set up the rematch with Hogan. And first off, they show Hogan returning to SmackDown. Vince McMahon comes out and says he's going to kill Hulkamania, and he makes the match between Hogan and The Rock. And then they showed the heel Rock, where he relied on a lot of comedy here, where he called Hogan a rock a jabroni, and just a lot of comedy here, and I wasn't a big fan of this.
He was definitely the annoying Rock at this point.
Yes.
He was just really spastic and all over the place.
Yeah, it ends with Rock spitting in Hogan's face, and needless to say, I don't think this rematch really had the interest of the first one. But we go into it. They've given The Rock a brand new entrance theme and video, which if you're going to push him as a heel, you pretty much had to do.
Yes, no catchphrase off the top. Slower paced, a lower key.
Yes, he walks out and he's introduced as the slow sauntering Rock by Michael Cole. And the gimmick is he now walks down to the ring slowly. So he was Randy Orton vintage. Hogan comes out to a gigantic pop in Montreal, which if you remember the night after WrestleMania, they were in Montreal and Hogan got a similar reaction where they were just crazy for him. Rock played Larry Zbysko early, stalling on the outside and not wanting to get involved. They note that the referee is a young Montreal referee named Sylvain Grenier, making his debut here in
the main event.
Main event against Rock and Hogan. Hogan takes two back bumps in the first 2 minutes, which I was shocked by. Rock is knocked into the turnbuckle 10 times and then takes the, quote, spit punch, as it's identified by the broadcast team, and goes to the floor. Hogan is guillotined on the top rope and then takes a very weak Rock bottom. Hogan barely gets off the ground and gets a two count. This was done to a very small pop. Rock then puts on Hogan's do-rag and whips him with Hogan's weightlifting belt. Rock then takes a drink of water.
Do-rag.
And Hogan makes a comeback and whips The Rock with his own weightlifting belt. This is a very slow, slow match, everybody.
You know, like, and you mentioned how the crowd reaction may not have been the same. Obviously, it can't rival the reaction of the Skydome. The novelty of this match had been worn out for over a year. The crowd was smaller, and it all came together to really expose the match for what it was. Like, this match and the WrestleMania match, they were not good technical matches by any means, and the lack of reaction here really exposed that.
Rock applied the sharpshooter, but Hogan lifted his arm, because apparently, for whatever reason, they were still doing the pull your arm up deal when you're in a submission. I thought that had been phased out by this point in time.
If a guy passes out, right?
Yeah. So, anyway, he keeps his arm up at 3, powers out of the sharpshooter. Rock then hits a clothesline to Hogan on the floor, and then starts dancing in front of the Spanish announce team, like this weird dance.
Well, he's in front of the Spanish announce team.
Because that's what they do. They dance.
Does, yeah.
Rock grabs a chair, swings it at Hogan, misses and hits the post. Then Hogan hits Rock with the chair. Ref then takes the chair from Hogan, and during this time, Rock hits a low blow to Hogan. Then hits two people's elbows to Hogan, the final one doing a Hogan pose before he delivered the elbow spot. This leads to a Hulk up spot where he hits the big boot, a leg drop, and then as he goes for the pin, the lights go out, so the ref cannot count 3. Then the lights come on, the referee is out cold, and so are Hogan and Rock. And then Vince McMahon comes out pretending to be confused, and giant chants of "You screwed Brett" are directed at Vince. Rock then comes up, gets a chair slid to him by the referee, and he hits Hogan in the head as Hogan is standing up looking at Vince. And then Hogan is taken out with the chair shot by Rock. Hogan blades, and then Rock hits another Rock bottom to Hogan for the pin. And it ends with Michael Cole yelling, "It's a damn screw job! It's a damn screw job!" And it ends with Vince ripping his shirt off, and he has a Hulk Hogan shirt underneath, where on the front it says, "What you gonna do?" with nothing written over top of it. And then on the back where it said Hulkamania rules, he took out rules and replaced it with sucks.
No, it said brother.
No, brother sucks.
Brother sucks.
Crowd was pissed here, and not the good kind of heel heat where, ooh, I can't wait to see this match. They were just pissed that you guys finally came back to Montreal 6 years after Survivor Series, and we got a fucking screw job finish. Thank you very much. Bad main event.
Great booking.
Yeah, bad main event. And amazing when you compare the SmackDown main event here of Rock and Hogan compared to the Team Angle versus Benoit and Lesnar match. Mm-hmm. Just like night and day.
Yeah.
This was
I agree.
Two really bad matches on this show, mm-hmm. with the main event and the Steiner Triple H match.
Yeah, I agree.
But other than that, I thought it was a pretty good show. I'm going to give this one a 6.5 out of 10. But those two matches really dragged it down because those were two of the big promoted matches on the show.
Yeah.
And I thought the Austin return was well done. And I loved that handicap match. I thought it was great.
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed a lot of the undercard on this show as well. I would say a good card overall. And plus, even though the matches were shit, they were well-promoted returns of The Rock, of Austin, and really Undertaker as well. SmackDown had great matches. I give this a 7.5.
Yeah, so it was a big promoted B-show for the WWE by their standards. So that was our review of No Way Out, everybody. We're now going to go into our feedback before we get to our interview. Let's take a break. Sorry,
Is it okay?
Yeah, we can do that.
2:30.
2:30, I got to interview
And Rep. Then after that with...
2:50 is Ash, and then 3:15 is Dave.
Cool. Sounds good.
So we'll get into our feedback now, and then our big interview with Dave Wills coming up later in the show today. So let's get into it. Jordan Ducharme. One thing I don't like about the whole Lawler-Cole thing is that the whole story has been about King getting a WrestleMania match because it's eluded him this entire time. In that same match, Michael Cole is also getting a WrestleMania match, so the importance of King getting his is like nothing. Michael Cole can possibly get his WrestleMania moment. It's a small gripe, and I don't see a way around it, but other than that, it should be entertaining. I want to see King rape Michael Cole after the beatdown.
It doesn't really bother me that much because, Michael Cole is going to WrestleMania to get the shit kicked out of him.
Yes, it's not something he's campaigning for, nor does he want.
It's not a glamorous moment, but Lawler actually, wants a glamorous moment. Eric Creamer, love the podcast, guys. Always have, always will. However, please stop referring to what Cena is doing as rapping. Would you say that the genius used to come out and rap? Would you define what Heidenreich used to do as rapping? I hope not. Cena comes out and delivers sophomoric poetry, plain and simple. He can emo it up and gay bash all he likes. There is simply no difference between a child passing a note in class with a slanderous rhyme written about their teacher and the likes of Cena, aside from the latter being a grown adult on national television. He gets enough credit that he, in my opinion, does not deserve. Please don't drag the term rap even deeper through the mud by mistaking it for what Cena does.
I think this is somewhat just arguing semantics. I mean, at the core, rap is a poem. You're just adding a beat and a flow to it.
Some people would say Soulja Boy isn't rap.
Yeah,
are we going to get into that?
So, I mean, Cena's character evolved out of a rap performer.
Yeah, whatever. I understand what you're saying, though.
John Funk, hey guys, I need your opinion on something. I've been buying a lot of Dynamite Kid DVDs as of late, and all I can say is, wow, no one in wrestling today or the last several years could touch this great wrestler. Though I would enjoy Bryan Danielson in the ring with this guy. Anyhow, I've heard several people call Dynamite the greatest ever, Bret Hart in particular. What is your guys' views on Dynamite, and how well do you think he would be today, shedding off 15 years or so? Thank you.
What do you think, John?
It all depends in what you like in a wrestler. I mean, Dynamite Kid had a phenomenal style that came at a time when it was very unique. I think if he had come around now with it, it wouldn't be as special because we've seen so much. At his point, especially for American wrestling fans, it was something very, very different that they hadn't seen, and it correlated very well for them at a time when, especially in the WWF when they came in, they were used to a much more mat-based style with bigger guys that weren't as, acrobatic or as took the kind of bumps that Dynamite Kid took. At the same end of it, I mean, Dynamite Kid had a much shorter career window because of that style, and it ended up, you know, putting the guy in a wheelchair.
I think we would, if Dynamite was around today in his prime, we would probably see him on
NXT.
NXT or TNA.
Where his gimmick would be that
explosion.
Yeah, we'd have like a firecrackers and stuff go off, and he'd be.
No, I meant TNA explosion because he would probably be.
I thought you'd make a play on words there because Dynamite explosion.
Yeah. George Rapose, hey guys, another great review as usual. Myself, as well as a few buddies of mine, noticed how they spoiled Taker vs. Triple H with the WrestleMania 27 promo clip that included their stare down. I'm beginning to think that this may be an issue with the score and not the WWE's fault. Back in 2007, I went to WrestleMania 23 in Detroit and was pretty pumped up for the show. But for whatever reason, on the Friday before Mania, I was tuning into the score and they were airing a promo that was previewing next Thursday's SmackDown before the score moved to Fridays, I believe, saying who will the Money in the Bank winner choose to cash it in on, and it showed Mr. Kennedy posing on the top rope, and then a side-by-side split shot Taker and Cena.
I would never read into those promos because, I mean, I know for a fact there have been numerous pay-per-views where they've decided the day of who's going over. I mean, yeah. The talk of, like, the plans that change in WWE are very, very well documented. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, to say that whether a guy is the initial person they have pegged to win it, I never really take – like, some people, they used to always get into the posters and think, oh, well, this guy's on the poster. It must mean something. Mm-hmm. It doesn't. And personally, from my understanding is that the WWE – outside of the score's own promos that they get during the time of the show, the WWE is responsible for that whole two-hour block. They sell the ads within the show, and they insert their promos. So, I mean, if their promo was inserted there, it was either given to the score ahead of time, or they put it in themselves. And, I mean, that promo was cut and should have been specifically stated, do not air till after the fifth segment of the show.
Well, knowing what I know from working at a TV station, I know that whatever goes on air is likely handled by the traffic department at the TV station. So I would assume that they were given this commercial from the WWE, and the person who scheduled the commercial just scheduled it in the grid, not knowing when they were going to do that Taker-Triple H confrontation, and it just so happened to air before.
Yeah. I don't think it was, like, the biggest deal in the world, but it did kind of tip their hand.
To kind
of
tough to control this, in my opinion. Sometimes.
It's you know, it happens a lot more often than I'm sure people think. But at the same time, was there one person that saw that promo and turned Raw off minutes
Absolutely
before
not.
The top of that angle was to culminate? So anyway, let's keep going here with Nicholas H. So I watched a match between Jeff Hardy and CM Punk at SummerSlam 2009. There was no crowd reaction for either wrestler as they came down to the ring. The fans didn't care. Back in the day, the crowd went crazy over everything. Granted, it was a different time. However, I do believe that the fact that characters used to be an extension of themselves and said their promos from the heart, or at least use their own words, is a huge factor. Fans can't relate with a fake character. Wrestlers aren't actors, and unless they're acting like themselves, ramped up a few notches, fans won't care. The Rock is an extension of himself, and the promo this past week by John Cena with the reaction they both got shows that written promos do not work. Fake gimmicks do not work, and we need to go back to being an extension of yourself. Unless you're the Undertaker, then you'll be fine playing a zombie.
I agree.
In general, I agree, but I would say Jeff Hardy and CM Punk are poor examples of guys who are playing gimmicks. I mean, and that was a very, very solid program. I don't think you can ever just paintbrush absolute facts saying that, you know, back in the day people loved everything and now they are quiet in their reactions for everything. I mean, it's different from city to city, from character to character, and there's lots of different circumstances. Look at this Montreal show we just reviewed. It was a complete polar opposite of the typical reactions they got in an American city if that pay-per-view had taken place.
And I would also say that, I mean, it'd be great if all wrestlers can just simply go out there and be extensions of themselves, but there are a lot of wrestlers that probably can't do that.
Some people are boring.
Some people, yes, or some people just simply can't bring that out of themselves. And those people probably need scripts, rely on scripts to make themselves better.
And there's tons of examples of, you know, back in the 80s, you know, when people will look at fondly on these WWF characters that were complete, couldn't be closer to what these people are like. Mm. And people, they came across well because they were performers performing as a character and could get it across. And it's a lot of different factors, obviously, that go into it.
Nate Milton, some thoughts on the latest review of Raw. In regards to the Miz versus Cena question, it might be true that Miz is currently more consistently entertaining than Cena, but on Miz's best day, he still doesn't compare to Cena in the mid-2000s. The only exception I have for the absurdity of the WWE All-Stars promo is that it was President's Day in the U.S., which is why George and Abe were on the undercard. And yes, that's true.
We don't celebrate President's Day.
We do not. Finally, the Cole comment about Cole's mother struck me in much the same way as Orton's Eddie in Hell crack hit me. It's a logical thing for the character to say, but that doesn't mean I like it. Statements like that actually take me out of a storyline.
Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't crazy about the line, but it didn't bother me as much because I have a feeling
it was
if Lawler didn't want it on, it wouldn't
have been there.
He definitely
agreed. So. Yeah, he definitely agreed to it. Man.
Jordan Fillmore, dear John and Way, I'm excited for your review of No Way Out. However, your podcast came to much use when some idiot ran the back of my bus when we were leaving school. No one was hurt, and I had some awesome review away and review and impact to listen to. The 2 hours flew by. There we go.
Yep.
Perfect for car accidents, everybody.
Joshua Chachenko. Kachenko.
Sure.
New Mexico is completely landlocked, and having lived along the Gulf Coast, I can't remember wearing anything more than a hoodie or a track jacket in February. In fact, I lived on the Gulf Coast in February 2008 and remember wearing shorts to the bar to watch this pay-per-view.
Was this in reference to us discussing if New Mexico is hot or cold?
Yes. No, it was in reference to the Gulf of Mexico match and why they were wrestling outside in February.
Oh. All right. The correct answer is, who cares? Brian Hillhouse, please review WrestleMania 17. I watched the show in the theater after having the supposed brilliant idea of going in drunk and intentionally sitting in the front row for a wow effect. But instead, I ended up feeling sick to my stomach because everything was so loud, and because I sat so close, the huge screen looked a bit fuzzy. I left the show thinking it was terrible until I watched the replay sober the next day and loved it.
That's some funny logic, Brian. To sit in the front row of a theater.
Hammered.
Hammered. For the wow effect. Simon Hansen. Hey, great review as usual. For the record, they did not change the name of the pay-per-view to Elimination Chamber until 2010, not 2009 as you said on the show. Apologies if you have already reviewed it since I've only been listening a couple of months, but it would be great if you could review WrestleMania 20 as it has a connection to this year's Mania as it not only featured Rock's last WrestleMania match, but his last match, period. Keep up the good work. Did we review that?
No, we have not.
Really?
Matt Cruz.
Oh, and I guess there's a reason.
I don't care. We can review whatever. Matt Cruz. Hey, guys, just a thought. You should add the dark matches into your reviews. Sometimes they are better than the actual matches on the pay-per-view. The dark match for No Way Out 2008 was Kane versus Shelton Benjamin. Although not a five-star classic, I'm sure it wasn't a bad match. All right.
I don't think we'll be doing that.
Lots of problems with this. Dark matches are not out there for people to watch.
No, even if we do find it, who's going to know what we're talking about?
Unless we luck into a fan with a handy cam at an event to post it.
Oh, God.
WWE does not air them anywhere because there's nowhere for people to take the stream
and post
them.
They're not relevant to history or storylines.
Not at all.
So I don't think so. Stefan Kyle Gosine. Hey guys, great job with the No Way Out 08 review. I listen to your podcasts each week and find them to be unmatched in terms of quality and content. I do have two comments and one request. Firstly, the person you mentioned in the feedback in the last podcast take an issue with the portrayal of black characters in WWE. My two cents on the subject are that, simply put, a lot of other ethnicities don't have any sort of representation in WWE or other forms of mainstream media. I 100% agree with the argument you guys put forward about it not being a racial issue, but instead being a business decision regarding who can be pushed. Did we say that? Business decision?
I think we were just talking about the fact that they're going to, if they feel they can make money with someone, they're not going to take
race into
effect.
Yeah. Okay. My second comment is on this week's Raw. After that opening promo by Cena, I'm far more excited about a Cena-Rock confrontation than a Miz-Cena confrontation. My request is for you guys to review WrestleMania 19 sometime soon. Michaels, Jericho, Angle, Lesnar, Hogan, Vince, and Rock Austin 3 was a great show, if I remember correctly. Anyway, love the podcast. Keep it up.
Ben Brisbois. Haha, Wasted Mariachi Ghost. That just happens to be the name of my sister's friend's band, and I never thought I would have heard someone use those two words together when they weren't referring to the band.
All right, great. Aram Nasrallah. Oh yeah, Montreal 2003. Another screw job letting us watch Steiner Triple H again. Wasn't it supposed to be Jericho versus Test in the opener? What happened? I think it was during his testicle run. For WrestleMania review suggestions, WrestleMania 7 featuring Undertaker's WrestleMania debut, WrestleMania 8 featuring Sid kicking out of the leg drop, or WrestleMania 12, the return of the old warrior. But that pay-per-view also included the Iron Man match, which would not be fun to review. Take care.
All right, we'll keep moving on here. We explained the test deal earlier in the show. Matt Waters, great review of No Way Out. I may be in the minority, but I always really enjoyed whenever Batista and Taker faced each other. Off the top of my head, I can't think of a match they had that would be considered bad. As for the Raw Chamber match, I remember the fan outcry when Triple H went over yet again, as everyone seemed to be really getting behind Jeff Hardy. But it turned out to be for the best, as Hardy got wellnessed again for a second time about 2 weeks later, so us fans were treated to the build that was Cena, Orton, Triple H. Yay.
Finally, from Martin Mink. Hey guys, just quickly want to comment on this Triple H spitting water thing. I believe they want to show that Triple H is on one hand using his regular entrance because it is that important to him, but on the other hand is very pissed at The Undertaker because he retired his best friend. I remember that Hunter did the same thing in a feud where it got personal. So he would be so angry that he couldn't even spit the water out, but instead just opened his mouth. And I mean, when you have a guy come out dressed as a mortician, how can you complain about drinking water, about not drinking water, but instead spitting it? Greetings from freezing Germany. Yeah.
So we were talking about Triple H drooling on Raw.
On Raw. And Martin has suggested a possible motivation for Triple H drooling.
Maybe. Maybe they all sat down and thought, hey, let's put some... Instead of acknowledging why and who put him out a year ago, let's talk about why he would have water.
They're in a creative meeting. I have this great idea. It'll subtly show that Triple H is angry at Michaels.
Yes.
And Taker retiring Michaels.
Great idea.
He'll spit water out when he comes out.
All right. Well, that's our feedback for this week. Of course, you guys can all leave your feedback at reviewaway.com on the Live Audio Wrestling Review Away Facebook group. Before we mention what we're going to be doing next week, it's time, Way, for the big Dave Wills interview here. We've been promoting this now since Thursday.
The
big
crying wrestling fan, Dave Wills.
Yes, and unlike TNA, we promoted this as a surprise, made the announcement, and now we're delivering here. So we had a build.
Yes.
So here it is, everybody. You may, I'm sure, you have seen the YouTube clip. He recently did a sketch with Tosh.0 with a number of WWE talent.
Tosh.0.
Is that how?
Yeah.
I've never watched him in my life. Tosh.0.
Okay.
Tosh.0.
Tosh.0. Anyway. Crying wrestling fan. We all know him. We all love him.
And Dave Wills, everybody. So here he is on Review Away. All right, everybody. Joining us now, very big guest for us here. You may have seen his online fame as the crying wrestling fan. The man is Dave Wills, joining myself and Way here. And Dave, first of all, real pleasure to have you here on the show. And thanks a lot for taking some time to chat with us.
Real pleasure to be on Live Audio Wrestling. I tell you, one of the shows that I've enjoyed listening to for years. And I really appreciate you having me as a guest. Thanks so much for inviting me on. I love talking to you.
Well, first of all, Dave, I mean, the obvious first question is going back, I believe it was 2006 when this was like the first real big wrestling viral clip. And when it first occurred on the Jimmy Kimmel Show, I mean, were you even aware ahead of time this was going to be airing? How did you even find out that this aired on Kimmel's show?
It actually came back from about 2005 when Tony Hunter did the tribute to Starrcade.
Yes.
In Spartanburg, South Carolina. They had a question and answer with the Midnight Express, Jim Cornette and Terry Funk, hosted by Bill Abner. And the clip went viral. I wasn't even aware of it until I was talking to a guy on a message board, and he actually said, they said, it's Dirty to be damned. I said, great line. I've used it before. He's like, have you seen the clip? I'm like, clip? Uh-oh. Where's it at? And I found it. It went viral, and was on the WrestleCrap board and all kind of places, and I'm like, good night, you know. Here I'm trying to trade tapes, and my image is, you know, is everywhere now, and I'm thinking to myself, wow, and I couldn't believe it was on the Kimmel Show. It was really a treat and everything. I didn't know what to do. All you could do is just, well, yeah, that's me. Just fess up, admit it, and move on.
So you weren't upset at this whole ordeal. You were kind of just completely fine with what happened here.
Well, at the end of the day, if someone wants to judge you through 30 seconds of your life, hey, many people do something, you know, they may not be totally proud of it. At least I wasn't picking my nose or scratching my butt, okay? I mean, at the end of the day, when you get right down to it, okay, I cried at a wrestling question and answer. Was it a serious subject? Yes, it was the week Eddie Guerrero passed away. It was the week someone was sent home for being in no condition to perform. It was something that concerned me about a lot of the death and the peel issues and stuff in wrestling. Sure, it was just tragic. But I understand they clipped the clip. I don't know if that's a phrase or a word or not. But they cut the clip in half, played it. Oh, there's some big fat Southern guy who thinks wrestling's, who just not find that wrestling's fake. Okay, well, I'm predetermined, maybe fake, never. Okay, if you want to be that shallow and judge me by that, that's fine. Have the guys on. A lot of the guys on YouTube are, you know, teenagers who just enjoy picking at someone. If they want to laugh at me and it leaves somebody who may not be able to handle it alone, so be it. I got great self-esteem. I'm not really worried about it. People who want to judge me can judge me by, you know, whatever they want standard. If they want to use 30 seconds of my life, go ahead.
Now, Dave, do you know the original uploader of the clip? Has that person come into contact with you?
No, I know that High Spots, who had rights to the video, I know they put up a full clip, but I don't know who clipped it. But I'm not mad at them or anything. I mean, hey, I got to, you know, I never did meet Jimmy Kimmel, but I got to, you know, be on Fox 2.0. Hey, you know, has it done really anything? No, but at the end of the day, hey, I got to trip out to Los Angeles, a great time, got some cash in my pocket. Hey, it was great fun. I can't complain. I don't know if it's really done me any good or bad or anything in my life, but if it raised a little awareness about the some of the issues in wrestling, that's great. If it made people, hey, I know you, okay, that's great. You recognize me to Captain D's now. Whatever's good for you.
Now, you managed to put that clip into context for us just in this interview. Knowing what you were, you know, feeling emotional about, it's easy to understand why you were crying. The fact that, you know, a clip like that is labeled crying wrestling fan, really, it's because of the public perception of a typical wrestling fan as perhaps a, you know, this older person who lives in his mom's basement who still thinks wrestling is real. What is your take on the public's perception of a pro wrestling fan right now?
A lot of what happens in pro wrestling, and a lot of them playing to the lowest common denominator, has caused this. How many times have we seen a gay baiting angle in pro wrestling? How many times has there been a racial baiting angle in pro wrestling? People don't look at pro wrestling like they should. To me, pro wrestling is a hybrid of good versus evil, something that can make you laugh and cheer. If you judge it in terms of low rent, people can say, okay, that's something that someone can go and, you know, get their prejudices out. Okay, that may be one case. But at the same time, too, it's a sport, and I still use the term sport, that are a form of entertainment that's enjoyed by people who are very intelligent or those who are not very, or who are very unintelligent. It is enjoyed by college graduates and high school dropouts. When done right, wrestling is a hybrid that can make you stand up and cheer, that can make you laugh, that can make you cry. How many people shed tears when Ric Flair retired a few years back? How many people shed tears when TNA's on every Thursday night? With some of the nonsense they do, you know. But at the end of the day, you know, people are going to judge wrestling fans as that. Wrestling has long been the highest rated program that nobody watches. No one wants to admit that. Do I want to admit that I walked into my house and saw that garbage the other week on TNA about, well, if you win, you get custody of your kids. Come on, who really, I mean, suspending disbelief, I mean, that's ridiculous. I'd much rather watch UFC than something that is totally ludicrous. Give me something where, you're fighting for the Southern title as Jerry Lawler and Bill Dundee, and Dundee's mad at Lawler because, you know, he's the king, and Lawler's mad at Dundee because he's a smart aleck. Hey, there you go. That's something I can get into. I could get on one side or the other and say, yeah, that guy's right. I'd be mad if this guy's calling somebody the king. Or another guy say, yeah, who's he think he is? I'll show him. Give me something I can get into. Not something so ludicrous. Who would do that? That's ridiculous. Of course, the biggest justification is when I went on Tosh, but I met real Hollywood writers, and thank God none of them were like Vince Russo. And Tosh, as a matter of fact, did about a 2.7 in the ratings, I think, and it still beat TNA. So that made me very happy that the show I was on be anything Vince Russo has ever written in TNA. That made me very pleased.
Wow, Dave Wills has outdrawn by double what TNA Impact has ever done. So that's something for the resume. Before we move on, Dave, you mentioned going out to LA and you did, I think, meet with some of Kimmel's representatives, because I had always heard the story. I think it was Dave Meltzer that had reported that, you know, they met with you, realized that you're a very intelligent wrestling fan, and that they didn't put you on the show as a result. Was that accurate?
Let me correct that. No, okay. I had never been to Los Angeles until the Tosh.0 clip aired.
Oh, okay.
They actually had talked to me on the telephone and asked me, well, would you cry if you were in a room of wrestlers? I said, I don't know. It depends on what the issue is. They're like, well, what if we put you in that? They're probably going for some kind of skin or something. I'm like, listen, you know. So we actually had talked about it, and they're like, well, okay, we'll bring you out here. And I'm like, well, I'm working this week. Would next week be better? You know, I said, right now I have a job. I had responsibilities. I was running a large hospital and making sure that maintenance and janitorial was taken care of in the Emory area here in Atlanta. So I wasn't going to blow it off for one second of fame. And you're right that I wasn't some raving lunatic or something like that. They did seem to be a little disinterested. But Tosh.0, I explained to them that, hey, listen, you know, this is who I am. I mean, I can come in there and do whatever. But, you know, do you want, you know, it's not more or less do you want the real me or do you want me to fake it? But this is what you're getting. Do you really want me to come out there? And their response is, we definitely want you to come out here. We want to have you fly here. We want you to talk. We want you to be yourself. We don't want you to put that. We let them get to know you, and the viewers can make their own decision. I'm like, fantastic. I'll be out there. Not a problem.
So tell us a bit about that sketch that recently aired on the Tosh.0 show, and also involving, I mean, Ted DiBiase was in it, Virgil, and, of course, Sergeant Slaughter. Tell us a bit about that experience.
I was very humbled, not in the Iron Sheik way, mind you, but I was very humbled the fact that they had all those great talents and great stars that I grew up watching in there. I had met the wrestlers before at various fan fests, but just to be able to be in a... to be listening to credits with people like Coco Beware, Daniel Tosh, Sergeant Slaughter, Ted DiBiase. It was very, very cool. But the biggest thing that surprised me is as I was flying from Atlanta, Ted DiBiase was actually on the same flight I was. I think someone may have made a mistake in scheduling us the same flight out there. He originally was going out there for, I think, some kind of religious conference, and it just happened he was in there, so he flew that day early. But all the plane tickets were sold out, and no one canceled, so he couldn't move up. So here I am getting on the plane, and I'm in coach, and there's the million-dollar man in coach. And that just didn't sit too well, because I'm like, just the million-dollar man, what's he doing in coach, you know? But at the same time, it was great to be involved. Sergeant Slaughter was fantastic. Coco Beware, he actually did an interview with me on a show I do for GeorgiaWrestling.com, the David Daniel Show. Ted DiBiase, I don't understand why his son Ted Jr. is not being pushed. Talk about a talent right there. I think of the world of Ted DiBiase Jr., and I just don't understand that right now. But like I said, everybody was super nice. We filmed, I think we started about 10 in the morning, and we're done by about 3, and I was sitting around eating cheese enchiladas with four members of the WWE Hall of Fame. Hey, what not bad for an afternoon plus getting paid for it? Yeah, give me some more Hollywood work. I'll be happy to do it. Not saying it's easy, but it sure was fun, doggone.
You can tell from watching that skit that Daniel Tosh was, at least at one time, a wrestling fan. You know, getting to talk to him. How big of a fan is Daniel Tosh?
He and I didn't get into how much of a fan he was, but I did talk to quite a few folks who were with the entourage and the staff and the crew, and they were very big wrestling fans growing up. As a matter of fact, one of the fun parts was that a lot of retakes we were doing were because he wanted to make sure he had the Ultimate Warrior voice good, and one of the things they were doing is play a YouTube video on a cell phone, like an iPhone or something, and he'd be like, oh, yeah, Warrior, you know, and be, you know, get his inspiration from the clip of the interview they're playing. And it was a fantastic time. Like I said, the whole group, they were fantastic, treated me like $1 million. I loved it. They all were huge fans back in the 80s. And to be honest, they told me they were glad that I came out there because it gives them a great excuse to invite some of their favorites and work with them on the show. And I was really tickled to be a part of it. They even built their own wrestling ring. They didn't call PWG or one of the promotions out there. No, they built their own ring. So I was really, really impressed.
Dave, as we wrap up here, I'm just very curious to know, I mean, as much as we can complain about, you know, the current product and the current booking, there's still always, once in a while, these elements of just intense emotion that appears on television. I'm just curious, when was the last time the crying wrestling fan cried at something in wrestling?
At some pro wrestling? Let me think.
Besides Impact.
I'm not for sure. I'm trying to think here. It may have been when Flair retired or something like that, or at one of the tributes that they had. I'm not for sure. I also don't remember offhand. But, I mean, there is, you know, like you said, it gets you emotional, and it's something. That's the great thing about wrestling. You can invest your emotion and stuff, and it's just can be liked by so many different people. I talked to one wrestler one time, and he made a comment that there was some mean guy who went every week, and he said that his wife told him that, you know, she loved him as a wrestler. And he said, why? And he said, well, when he comes down here and screams at you, he doesn't come home and beat me up. And I hate to say that, you know, that's a stereotype of a wrestling fan. But in the end of the day, at least it was a catharsis that didn't, you know, cause that poor person to get hurt and everything, you know. So you got to get your energy out. You got to get your emotions out. And, you know, at least when it's something and it's something emotional, like, you know, Ric Flair retiring or Shawn Michaels' last match or something like that happening, at least it's healthy, it's good, and it's good to cry, and you can cry when you're happy, sad, no matter what, and everything. I really love the sport. I hope it doesn't change, but unfortunately, it just may have.
And before we end off here, Dave, anything you want to promote that you've got going on?
Anybody who wants to contact me can feel free to contact me via my website, itsstillrealtome.com, itsstillrealtome.com. If you are a TV producer or a comic book convention guy or fan fest guy or whatever and need some guy who works very, very cheap to show up and sell pictures and stuff and doesn't mind flying on Delta, give me a call or give me an email. Hey, I'll go to open up a Snickers bar if you want me to. What am I talking about? It's easier than working for me. But seriously, though, it's tarutami.com if someone wants to contact me. Also, if someone... myself and my good friend and for 18 years, Mark Danger, we do a show called The Dave and Danger Show on the Georgia Wrestling History Radio Network. And it's called The Dave and Danger Show, and it's at daveanddangershow.com. We do an interview show Tuesday nights at 8 o'clock. We didn't have a show this week. I believe we'll have one either next or the week after. But we do have an archive up. We've interviewed some great stars. A lot of stars are from the southern territories, which I grew up on. Stars like Gorgeous Gary Young, Wildcat Wendell Cooley, Glacier, Ray Lloyd, Terrence the Beauty Garvin, so many great wrestlers who've been around, Moondog Rex, Randy Colley. If you'd like to hear some of our interviews, feel free to go down there, download them. They're free. And believe me, we definitely would love to hear your feedback. And if you're a wrestler who wants to appear in our show, feel free to drop me a line at DaveAndDangerousShow.com or ItStillRealToMe.com. Love to hear from anybody out there. And thank you for your support. And I want to thank the wrestling fans for my support, the feedback I've got on my Facebook page and through emails and notes and stuff like that has been phenomenal, and I appreciate the support of them for the not only the clip but for the viewing of Tosh.0. I got recognized at a Captain D's for what it's worth. So, hey, thanks a lot. Appreciate that.
So that was Dave Wills, everybody. It was great to have Dave on. He is a listener, and we appreciate him coming on the show and chatting with us. And probably the most famous wrestling fan, I would say, right now.
Is that right? Yeah, you could be right.
I would think so. So I know that we wanted to start having listeners on the show, so we figured Dave is a great way to start that off. We will start with maybe the most well-known wrestling fan, and in the future weeks, we'll hopefully have some other listeners of the podcast come here on the show, because, quite frankly, Jay Hunter has gotten quite a lot of votes.
For whatever reason. I wonder why.
Lots of guys.
Why do people want to hear Jay Hunter talk so much?
So that will wrap up this week's edition of Review Away. I want to thank Dave Wills for joining us. All of your feedback next week, Way. I wanted to keep on the same timeline and review WrestleMania 19, which took place the same year, following No Way Out. And I'm hoping to get a guest for next week that will add a lot of interesting insight to this whole time period. So we'll be working on that. Don't want to say who it is until we have it confirmed. But WrestleMania 19 next week from Seattle, Washington. It did a shitty buy rate by WrestleMania standards, but was a good show. So we'll run that one down. But Way, any closing words and some tunes to go out with here?
I do not have any closing words.
All right.
My tune is this great cover of Bring Me to Life by some band.
All right, here we go. Another rendition of Bring Me to Life.
Yes.
Maybe Mariachi Ghost does a cover of Bring Me to Life.
I would love that. I have no idea, I'm sorry.
Is there a cover of Bring Me to Life?
There probably
I'm
is.
Sure there is. There's always a cover of something.
Not too loud. Daddy, not too loud.
Is that loud?
Yeah.
Okay, start over. Evanescence.